Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, November 14th, day number 319 of 2012, and tonight we're talking sports, and we're talking sports with my good friend David Busby and my other very good friend Carlos Torres, and we're going to be talking about the Rangers, we're going to be talking about the Cowboys, the Mavericks, hopefully something good about the Stars tonight, and we're even going to touch on Texas A&M. What a great victory the Aggies had last Saturday against number one Alabama. So we're going to get into all of that with David and with Carlos in just a second. Before we do, though, we're going to hear from our sponsor, Avalon Professional Translation.
Sending the right message in multiple languages is easy with Avalon Professional Translation Services. Avalon provides document and web translation in 62 languages. In addition, access to 140 languages is just a phone call away any day of the year. Events, even court depositions, no problem for Avalon. Call 972-404-1213 or go to avalontranslation.com. Avalon Professional Translation Services, global communications made easy.
And I need to remind you that we have a link to the Avalon Professional Translation website on our show information. You can click on that and go to their website and learn a great deal more about their translation services. I mean, these guys translate all over the world. They're an absolutely amazing organization based here in Dallas, Texas. Let me say hello to David Busby. How are you, David?
I'm doing good tonight.
All right. And how is Carlos Torres?
Now, doing excellent. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. We, of course, are three good friends here in the Dallas area, and we're going to talk about sports today. But, guys, I thought I would begin by going down a little memory lane here and talking a little baseball history on this day. Obviously, the season, we're not playing baseball this time of the year, but we've had a lot of MVPs that were issued or MVP awards that were announced this time of the year. 1946, Ted Williams won the MVP. What makes it amazing is he had taken off 3 years to go to World War II. So he was out of baseball for 3 years, comes back in 1946, and he wins the MVP, the amazing Ted Williams. 1957, Henry Aaron was awarded the MVP. 1973, Reggie Jackson was awarded the MVP. And here's one that touches all of us. 1996, Juan Gonzalez was awarded the MVP. And this was the closest MVP race they had ever had. Three votes. He was awarded three votes over Alex Rodriguez. Anybody remember that, Carlos?
Oh, yeah. That was a fun season. That's when we used to call him Popeye because he had those huge, unfortunately, steroid arms. But, yeah, I mean, he was hitting them out left and right, and he had a great fielding percentage. I remember that year.
Right.
So, yeah.
That was an amazing year.
He was great.
96 and 98, he was the MVP of the American League. He was truly a great player. David, do you remember Juan Gonzalez? I know you're a very young guy.
Oh, I remember him quite a bit, and he was actually one of my favorite players to watch when they moved to the new ballpark and everything. And I remember going to games that everyone would call him Igor, and then his song was always the Darth Vader march and everything. So it was just
yes.
It was fun every time he went up. But I didn't realize with the voting that it was only three votes that separated the two of them.
Yeah, 1996. A-Rod was not technically a rookie that year. He had come up in 95, but that was his 96 was really his first full season. And I believe, if my memory serves me right, that A-Rod won the batting title that year. And you know, some of you may remember A-Rod back then. You know, he was this tall, skinny guy playing shortstop. I don't know if anybody has that memory of him. Either one of you have that memory of him?
Playing for the Mariners.
That's right, playing for the Mariners. Number three. Number three. Quite a player. But one thing about Juan Gonzalez, if anybody had said to me, or either one of you, I guess, in 1996, that his career would be effectively over in 5 or 6 years later, I wouldn't have believed that. I mean, I thought he had a real shot at 500 home runs, maybe more. But his career pretty much ended by 2001. I mean, he was traded away, if you remember, after the 1999 season. He was traded to Detroit. And then it just went all downhill from there. He never really had a good season after that, guys. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and, you know, I follow him, you know, him being a fellow Puerto Rican. I followed him closely. And his is a really sad story because, you know, he made, you know, when those MVP years, you know, he, I don't know if you remember, but he re-signed a contract. It was a huge contract for the Rangers. I can't remember. It was quite a bit of millions. But, you know, like to your point, 2001, 2002, he was out of baseball. And I remember I went home in 2000, and there is a story. I mean, in the news is this paternal lawsuit against him. This lady claimed that this kid was his son, and you know, Juan was like, no, and you know, he spent all this money. The funny thing is that the kid looked identical to him. You know, being 2 or 3 years old at the time, it's like, you know, and eventually the DNA test did show that he was the son of Juan. But, you know, if I remember correctly, by 2006, the guy was bankrupt. And, you know, because of the steroid era, and he did use steroids, he's admitted to that. I mean, I remember seeing him again on TV, just slinky, slender guy. You know, he wasn't Popeye anymore. He was just a skinny guy. And, you know, he, back home, he's just not, you know, he doesn't have any of his money left. And it's just sad how modern professional sports, people just take advantage of you.
Right.
And the
no,
money
I know.
Goes away.
This is one of the real tragic stories, Juan Gonzalez, one of the real tragic stories, because you're right. He was at the top of the world, two MVPs in 3 years. And people like me thought this guy is going to hit 500 home runs. But and then the other big story about Juan Gonzalez, you guys may remember this. He was, when he was traded to the Tigers at the end of the 1999 season, when he got to Detroit, Detroit was at that time, they had the new stadium, Comerica. So they wanted to bring in a big-name player. That's why they signed him. And they offered him a huge contract, like $160 million or something like that, and he turned it down because he wanted to be a free agent. That, talk about a mistake, because he was never able to negotiate anything like that ever again. So he, you know, he could have had $140, $160, something like that that the Tigers offered him, and he turned it down. It was just unbelievable. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, and you know, at the time, that was the biggest contract. That was at that time. It was the biggest contract ever offered, and I thought it was crazy too.
Right? No, I know. It's just amazing to me how everything. You know, this is a guy who just, he's not that old right now. I mean, how old would he be? I mean, this was
I think we're both exactly the same age.
Really?
I believe he's 39.
Really?
He might
he's
be a year
young.
Or two.
So he's not even. I mean, he came up in 96, or actually he came up in 92, as I recall. So that
yeah.
was 20 years ago. And he was a fairly young guy when he came up. I know he was quite a splash when he first came up. Remember those were the years when the future Rangers outfield was going to be Sierra, Gonzalez, and Sammy Sosa. You guys remember
right.
that?
And here's a funny trivia question. I'm trying to remember, but I think it was 92. Ruben Sierra, it might have even been 91. He actually lost the MVP by 3 votes, too.
Right. I think Robin Yount was in it that he lost it,
yeah,
too.
I know. So.
I think we're making Bobby David feel really like he's really young or something. Right, David? You remember that, right?
I remember most of that stuff, but I don't remember all the ins and outs.
Okay.
contracts and things of that nature.
Yeah. No, but you're right. Ruben Gonzalez lost out on the MVP. I mean, Ruben Sierra lost out on the MVP 1 year. But, I mean, it's a real tragedy. The Juan Gonzalez story is really a tragedy because in about 10 years, he went from being on top of the world to, unfortunately, like you were saying, having all kinds of economic problems. Now, one more question about Juan Gonzalez. Wasn't he married to Olga Cañón or Olga Tañón?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, for those who may not know, she's a very popular, is it a salsa music singer? I think she is salsa, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she was like, you know, they were like the Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe of Puerto Rico, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, the two most famous Puerto Ricans in their respective fields, you know, they got married and they were quite a couple. They're not married anymore, I assume, right?
No, no. And that title would now go to J.J. Barea and Zuleika. Just lost her last. She was a Miss Universe. So they're the hot couple now back home.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. So JJ has done well. We're happy for JJ.
Yeah.
He's done well in the marriage front. That's good. Well, let me jump to a couple of other, speaking of postseason awards, R.A. Dickey, Cy Young in the National League, and David Price in the American League. You know, David Price, obviously, great pitcher. R.A. Dickey, though, great story. I mean, I'm sure all of you remember when he was here. I don't know, David. That's a great story, R.A. Dickey. It's just a fantastic story.
Yeah, no, I was reading about it, and I mean, it completely flipped my mind that he was actually the first knuckleball winner of that award and everything. So that was kind of surprising when I was reading it. I was like, I thought there were probably some other ones. I mean, it's very rare because the only other knuckleball pitchers that I know of and can remember were
but Charlie Huff, of course.
Well, Charlie Huff originally, yeah. I remember watching him play, and then all of a sudden I've just lost my train of thought of the guy from Boston. Tim Wakefield.
Yeah, Tim Wakefield, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Tim Wakefield, yeah. Well, it's probably tough to win the Cy Young when you're a knuckleball pitcher because you can have big games and good games. I think they like to give it more to a fastball pitcher, if you know what I mean. I think there's a certain bias for that, I think, maybe in baseball. But I, from a personal standpoint, guys, I think this award going to R.A. Dickey, this is really a triumph, I think, of not just a great year, but just a great human being and a great human story, guys.
Oh, yeah, I'm super pumped and excited for him. That is a great, yeah, like to your point, it is hard. For a knuckleball, because like to your point, knuckleballer is either on or off. They can have two or three games in a row, almost no hit, but they get to that fourth game and boom, people are just lighting them up left and right. So that is awesome.
Yeah, that's what makes Charlie Huff so amazing, that he was able to basically do it for about 10 or 12 years pitching for some very bad, you know, Rangers teams in the 1980s, and yet he was able to win 150, 160 games. In his, I think actually 200 altogether he won, but that was with combining with after he left the Rangers. But I mean, I thought Charlie Huff was amazing to go out there as consistent as he was with the knuckleball. But R.A. Dickey is a great story. Here's a great trivia question for you guys. Let's see, who was the starting pitcher for the Rangers opening day 2004? I wonder who remembers that.
2004.
I gave away the answer. Yeah, I kind of gave away the answer. That's it. R.A. Dickey. I mean, you talk about coming a long way. He was the starting pitcher for the Rangers opening day, 2004. He was with the Rangers that year. Actually, I think he had a pretty decent start. I think it caught up with him eventually. But he had a pretty decent start with the Rangers that year. R.A. Dickey. I don't know if he was originally a Ranger or if he came here from another organization, but I do remember when Buck Showalter was here that he pitched for the Rangers, and I think he eventually got released and ended up with the Mets. That's kind of the story I know. David, I don't know if you have any other facts about his story.
Well, I'm just kind of looking him up and everything. And I mean, I'm surprised he's only 38 years of age.
Right, no, I know.
At him, I'd be like, I thought he was just a – a little bit older, but
so did I.
I guess right around that age. I mean, it's kind of like you're kind of at your peak of, all right, now it's time to start thinking about how many more years I'm going to play and everything. But yeah, looking at his pitching statistics in 2001, he started with the Rangers and only played or pitched 4 games. And then apparently he was out for 2002 and then stayed with the Rangers through 2006, then moved on to Seattle, then Minnesota, and then onto the Mets where he's at right now.
Right. He bounced around a little bit, but I just remember him in 2004. I don't think he was a knuckleball pitcher back then. I don't remember him as a knuckleball pitcher. I just remember he had this very funny windup. That's what I remember about R.A. Dickey. But we do wish him well, and, of course, David Price, the same thing. Well, let's switch a little bit. We'll get back to baseball in a minute, guys. But, Carlos, what's the latest on the Stars? Are we ever going to watch a hockey game again?
Again, yeah.
I mean, a National Hockey
this
League
season,
game.
Yeah. Yeah, again, yes, this season, no, I don't think so. The only thing I've seen, I know on the 11th, which was, what, Sunday, I think, Don Fehr, you know, if you go to the NHL Players Association
right.
website, you know, he's talking about how the owners are not wanting to budge on anything right now. So that's the last thing I've heard. I haven't heard any more updates. I know that they're, you know, they are fighting hard all of a sudden. You know, people start missing paychecks. People start missing money. All of a sudden they're working allegedly hard to get somewhere. But from the last update I got, it just doesn't seem like we're getting anywhere.
Well, it's going to be very hard to have any kind of a respectable season. You would have to have a, because they would need at least 30 days of training, preseason training. So you couldn't really get anything started until January, which means maybe they would play a 45-game season or something like that. That's about as good as it can be. But it's a shame because I think they're killing themselves. Both sides are really throwing grenades at each other. I mean, they're really, really killing their popularity. Well, let's go to another sport, the Dallas Mavericks, life without without Dirk. How is that working out for you guys? David, what do you think of the Mavericks?
Well, the Mavericks started off really well, and they've kind of hit a little stumbling block right now. But, I mean, they're doing pretty well against the winless Wizards right now with the 20-point lead with about a minute and a half or so left in the third and everything. So, I mean, it's nice that they're turning it around and they're actually able to put a team together while Dirk's out. So when Dirk does come back, it will only just help improve the team where hopefully they can go on a longer win streak and surprise fans here in Dallas as well as fans in the NBA just thinking that, you know, okay, the Mavs have just redone their whole roster all over again, basically. That, I mean, if they get these win streaks going, they're going to surprise a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, I just think it's weird watching, very weird watching a Mavericks game without Dirk, if you know what I mean. I mean, because it's been such a long time. He's been just, such a fixture here that when you're watching the TV, you keep looking for, where's Dirk? Where's Dirk? And he's not there. Carlos, do you have any thoughts on the Mavericks?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, I really like watching O.J. Mayo. I mean, that guy is really, really good. And I like that Vince Carter has stepped up, and he's been playing pretty good. So, yeah, I'm with David. I think, you know, if they can string some games and, you know, get a little bit further down the road and get Dirk back and the other guy that's out, the big guy. I'm sorry.
I can't think of his name either. Which one is that? Who's that, David?
Oh, I don't. I'm.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank on who. I mean, I know exactly
Brandon
who
Wright.
It is. I'm just drawing a blank on his name also, but I know who you're talking about.
But once we get both of them back, and like I said, O.J. Mayo is a great addition.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're going to be a good team. And, you know, the Lakers aren't doing so hot.
that's amazing that they fired their coach, right?
Right.
And then they wanted to bring back
the guy from Phoenix.
Yeah, Phil Jackson, right? And, you know, I have to confess, I know he had won a bunch of titles. I didn't realize he had won 11 titles.
He's the greatest coach ever.
I know, that's what I mean. I mean, this guy is, I can't think of any other sport or someone who's won that many titles. I mean, Casey Stengel won 9 of them. But, you know, that was, the only other guy I can think of who's had that many or even come close to that, 11 titles. That's a... But they didn't get Phil Jackson, right? They passed him up. They got somebody else with the Lakers, I think, right?
They got Mike D'Antoni.
From the Phoenix, right.
Right, okay. All right, yeah, they didn't. And I wonder why, though. I mean, was Jackson just not interested? I mean, he's been coaching a long time. I'm sure he doesn't really need the money.
I don't think he has anything to prove.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. You win 11 NBA titles. What are you going to prove, you know? I mean, that's right. I mean, maybe, like, if he was in a tie with another coach and they both had 11 NBA titles, maybe you try to get number 12. But, my God, he's probably 5 or 6 ahead of the next guy. I mean, the Celtics had that great coach who I'm drawing blanks tonight. I can't think of names tonight. But remember the Celtics, the legendary coach of the Celtics, who won a bunch of titles with him?
Red something.
Yeah, Red Auerbach, was it?
Yeah,
who won, like, a bunch of titles when Bill Russell was there, and I guess 50s and 60s, but I don't think that he won 11. I know he won quite a few, but he won 11. But I agree with you guys. I think the Mavericks are actually exciting, and they've been fun to watch. Hopefully they can keep it up. Well, let's move on to another local team, kind of local, and that's the Texas A&M football team, guys. I have to say, in the interest of full disclosure, that I'm a big Aggie fan because I have 2 sons who graduated from that school. But that was quite a shocker on Saturday. I was watching that game. I couldn't believe what I was watching, guys. I was happy, but that was quite a shocker, Carlos.
Yeah, I think that Alabama was just looking forward, and you know, A&M went in there with a full head of steam and took full advantage of Alabama trying to look into the future. And I was super excited, super, super excited about that.
Yeah, so was I. How about you, David? Did you get a chance to watch it?
I didn't get a chance to watch it, which I was really sad being a Aggie wannabe, basically, because I've always enjoyed the whole tradition of the 12th man and just with the Aggies and stuff and with the bonfire, but you know, that went away for something else. But, I was really sad that I didn't get to watch the game and everything. And I was even reading some of the stats and everything between A&M and Alabama. And, one of the big stats was A&M was actually 1-10 against top ranked teams. I was like, wow, I was kind of flabbergasted that they even had 1 win against the top teams, because normally they kind of choke when they get up and play those top teams. But I think with A&M joining in the SEC this season, that they had everything really to prove that there really wasn't a downside for them, because everyone was thinking that they're just going to kind of go winless or be at the bottom of the pack. But yet they come out and they're 8-2 right now, and then all of a sudden the whole nation's talking about A&M stunning Alabama, because Alabama's like, oh, we should easily handle a team like this. But I mean, it just goes to show you can't count anyone out.
Right, and they're all the way up to number 9. I think they went from number 15 or number 16 all the way up to number 9. And Alabama is not number 1 anymore. I mean, I don't have the standings in front of me, but Alabama did drop from number 1 to, does anybody know what they dropped to, David?
They dropped to 4th.
4, okay, so number 1 is
actually,
so number 1 is Kansas,
yeah.
Is that right?
Kansas is number 1, followed by Oregon, and then Notre Dame, and then comes Alabama.
Wow, now that, for some of the older guys like me, it's kind of nice to see Notre Dame on the top again. I mean, that's, you know, you guys are younger than me, but when I was growing up, it was always Notre Dame at the top or among the top schools, and then they kind of faded away for a while. So it's kind of nice to hear Notre Dame, you know, up there potentially fighting for a title, because I'm a huge fan of Notre Dame, and I love their fight song. Okay, that's the best fight song in sports is Notre Dame. Do you guys agree with me or disagree with me?
I'm going to be honest with you. I completely hate Notre Dame. My dad.
I'm
going to
tell Pope Benedict on you, Carlos.
Yeah, you could tell him. That's
I'm
okay.
I'm
going to
send
Pope
Benedict a letter saying that you are failing as a Catholic, that you hate Notre Dame.
I mean, it's a Catholic university with a French name. I mean, that's always awesome. But, no, I mean, in the 80s, my dad was a big Notre Dame fan, and I still am a big University of Miami fan for football. And, you know, that was a huge rivalry in the 80s.
Yes, it was. In the 80s. Yeah, you're right. That was huge, yeah, back then.
Yeah. So my mom used to get nervous in those days because my dad and we were mean to each other. So, you know, and my daughter will say this. She's on the drill team in our local high school, and the fight song they use is the Notre Dame fight song, and every time they score a touchdown or before a game, I just cringe. I hate that song.
Oh, my God. So I didn't know that. I thought that was, like, owned by Notre Dame, that nobody could use that. I guess it must be a generic generic music or something that anybody can pick up. I didn't know anybody other than Notre Dame has that fight song, but it is a great fight song.
It is very popular, and actually it is their fight song, but I think something about these schools, because it's high schools, that it's okay for them to use them from what somebody told me,
the
coaching staff.
Well,
but,
I'm glad that they let him use that, because that is really a cool song, but you know, Notre Dame being up there, that at least for me, that's kind of nostalgic.
It is. Those were some good games back in the 80s. And to your point, you know, remember they signed a huge contract with ABC or NBC back, I think, in 2000?
Notre Dame,
Yeah. And ever since they signed, it kind of went downhill from there, which, you know, I was excited about. But, yeah, they come back the last two seasons, so.
No, you're right. I mean, Notre Dame, NBC is very happy that Notre Dame is back, because you're right. That's a school that has its own TV network, which is kind of rare in schools these days. But what do you? I mean, the Aggies, their next opponent. I'm trying to remember. Do they play Kansas next? I'm trying to remember who they play next, because you know, if you know, they're 8-2. David was saying they probably have about two or three more games. I mean, they might get a shot at a pretty good postseason bowl game.
Yeah, definitely.
Does anybody know who they play next? I should know. I should have looked it up. Does anybody know who they play next? David, I'm not sure either.
I'm trying to look it up really quick.
Yeah, no, I just thought. But, you know, the one thing about, while we looked that up, the one thing about this A&M team, Carlos, that really excites me is this young quarterback that they have. I mean, he really looks good. I mean, this guy is really a good-looking quarterback, Carlos.
And I'm hoping it doesn't go to his head and he goes into the NFL right away, because they could keep him around at A&M for a couple
though,
of years.
Right? He's a freshman,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
he's
he
a freshman,
is.
Which is remarkable. And the one thing I'll say about A&M, since they switched to the SEC, they sort of changed their uniforms a little bit. I mean, they still have the basic colors, but the design is just a little bit different. You know, that white uniform that they wore on Saturday, they almost look like the Denver Broncos. They have that look of the Denver Broncos, if you know what I mean. So I was very happy. I mean, the team looked great. Johnny Mysel? Is that his name, the quarterback?
Yeah, that's
who it is.
I know they had, was it Tannen Hall? Or he plays for Miami now, for the Miami he's played for my right now. And it's funny because one of my coworkers, her son played for A&M the last 4 years, and now he is in the San Francisco 49ers in their practice squad. Yeah, he's in the practice squad.
Okay,
so we're hoping he makes the team next year, but. But, you know, it was exciting seeing, you know, A&M last year was coming, you know, they were up and coming last year, so.
Well, the thing about last year's season is, the thing about last year's season, guys, that they had these games that they blew in the last quarter. So when we were watching that game on Saturday afternoon against Alabama, I kept thinking to myself, okay, please don't blow it in the last quarter, because the prior season, I mean, they had a bunch of games like that where they blew it in the last quarter. But we congratulate the Aggies. We'll find out in a minute who they're playing next, but we congratulate the Aggies. Guys, we're going to take a little break while David does that great research for us. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll finish with the Aggies. We'll get into the Rangers, and we'll get into the Cowboys. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we're talking to Carlos Torres and David Busby, and we're talking about sports here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We're going to take a break, and we're going to hear from our sponsor for the second segment, Aaron Cleary of the book Worthless.
A bachelor's degree from a public school costs $36,000. A bachelor's degree from a private school costs over $100,000. And graduate degrees can easily run a $250,000. But the book Worthless only costs $13. Getting educated is important, but even more important than that is making sure you or your children choose the right major. You plain cannot afford to drop $50,000 and 4 years of youth on a degree that isn't going to pay off. So make sure you don't. Buy Worthless by Aaron Cleary. Worthless is the young person's indispensable guide to choosing the right major. It not only reveals different majors and their starting salaries, but goes into the economics of why such degrees are worthless. It's great for the prospective student and great for the parent who might be having trouble convincing the prospective student of choosing a wise major. It's only $13 on Amazon and only $5 on Kindle. That's less than 1/10,000th the cost of a bachelor's degree and may prove to be a better investment than college itself. How can't you afford such a worthwhile book? Buy it for yourself. Buy it for your kids. Buy it now. That's Worthless.
Well, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we're going to get back to our friends David Busby and Carlos Torres, but just want to remind everybody that we have a link to the book Worthless by Aaron Cleary on the show information. If you click on that, it'll take you to the page, and you can get the book. You can get it in print, or you can get it Kindle, which is the way a lot of people are buying books these days, just downloading the book into your computer. It's a pretty easy way to buy the book. And I think the book is on, the Kindle is only like $5.50, so it's quite a price. It's a very good book, especially if you have young people who are planning, you know, son or daughter who's planning to go to college. He or she is going to get a lot of good information about selecting a good major, he or she can use in our economy today. Let's get back to Carlos Torres and David Busby. Guys, thanks for waiting. And, David, did we get an answer on who the Aggies are playing next week?
We do. And Sam Houston State. Sam Houston State.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're actually 8-2 in their division in the Southland. Well,
yeah, go ahead, Carlos.
Keep in mind, Sam Houston State played for the NCAA Division I championship last year. And they have a whole bunch of guys returning this year. I think they're ranked number 3 in the Division I, the NCAA Division I. So they're a pretty good team. I know they lost to Baylor earlier this year.
Right. Well, let's hope that the Aggies don't react to Sam Houston the same way Alabama reacted to the Aggies. You know, that they don't assume any victory, because you got to win it on the field. But for those who may not be familiar with Texas, Sam Houston University is right between Dallas and Houston on I-45. Not right between, actually. It's actually closer to Houston. But when you're driving on I-45, the biggest statue of Sam Houston that you will ever see is right there, and right behind it is Sam Houston University. So it's quite a statue when you're driving by that school. You see this. Have you guys seen that statue?
Several times.
I haven't yet. I've seen pictures of it, but I haven't seen how tall that statue is.
Well, I'm probably exaggerating a little bit. It's not as big as the Statue of Liberty, but it's pretty big. I mean, it's not like the Statue of Liberty, okay? I don't want people to get the wrong impression, but this is a big statue.
I believe it's 50 feet tall. I mean, it's pretty tall. It's about 5 stories high.
Yeah, I know. It is huge. It is huge. I had no idea of how tall it was actually in measurement. But in terms of in appearance and in terms of, you know, you're driving on I-45 and all of a sudden this thing is to your left or to your right, I guess, depending on which way you're going. If you're going east, it's to your left, and you see this gigantic statue, and your first reaction is, who's that? And then, of course, it says on there, Sam Houston. Well, we wish the Aggies well. And, David, if you have the schedule in front of you, who do they play after that? Do you have that schedule?
Yeah, their last game after Sam Houston State is Missouri on November 24th.
So the Aggies actually, not to get ahead of ourselves, the Aggies actually have a pretty good chance of going 10-2.
They really do. I mean, they're based on ESPN's website, Missouri's not even ranked. And the Aggies' two losses, I mean, they lost to LSU 24-19. And at that time, LSU was ranked sixth. So, I mean, they were keeping up with the sixth-ranked team right there. And then the second week are actually their first game since their first game with Louisiana Tech was postponed. They lost to, at that time, number 24 ranked Florida 20-17. So, I mean, they could have almost been undefeated
right
to this point.
And the amazing thing about the Aggies is that they started the season, they were not in the top 25 when
mm-hmm.
they started the season, or maybe they were like 26 or something. I mean, they were not in the top 25. I don't remember that they were. So they've made quite a stride this year, and it's a young team. That's the amazing thing about it. But if they were to go 10-2, David, where do you think they would play in the postseason bowls? Any idea?
Oh.
Cotton Bowl maybe here in Dallas?
I don't think it'd be the Cotton Bowl. I mean, it'd be fun just because that's kind of the history back when we had the Southwestern Conference and everything, because that was always the bowl that
right.
they always wanted to go to because that was the big one for them. But I mean, it'd be nice to kind of see them branch out to a different bowl. But, I mean, I can't remember what the breakouts are with the bowl and all that.
Well, now, of course, they do it. Now it's all done by that computer or whatever, BCS or whatever, how they do it. But I'd love to see the Aggies play in the Cotton Bowl. I think that would do a lot for the Aggies. And if nothing else, my sons can go to the game a lot easier because they don't have to travel. The last time that the Aggies played in the Cotton Bowl a couple of years ago when they played LSU, it was a lot of fun for the Aggie fans to go to that game. Well, let's move on to let's move on to the Rangers, guys. And Adrian Beltre was named the Ranger Player of the Year. Any surprise on that, Carlos?
No, that's appropriate. I mean, he's a great guy, a great player. And, I mean, he's about our only shining star there towards the end when we started running out of gas, so.
That's
he is
right.
Very deserved. I mean, Golden Glove winner. I mean, you can't say anything more for the guy. I just hope in here in a couple of years we can call him a World Series champion with the Rangers.
That's it. That's the only thing missing. Yeah, Adrian Beltre, that's the only thing missing. David, any thoughts to Adrian Beltre being selected by the Rangers as the Player of the Year?
Well, I think with what happened with Josh Hamilton and everything that – it's really no surprise that Beltre was named that. And I think it's more fitting for him because, I mean, he went out every game and gave it everything he could. And, I mean, even with the bruised shoulder and everything, he still wanted to play. But, I mean, you also just kind of have to look at his streaks and his stats that he never went up and down with his batting average. He was always consistent with that. But then, I mean, when he started getting the bat around, I mean, those balls were just going yard left and right. And so, I mean, that just helped his home run stat. But
right. He is.
Yeah,
go ahead. No.
I think that was the right decision for the Rangers. I mean, I really can't think of anyone else that could – receive that award unless you want to look at some of the pitchers, possibly.
Right. But, well, the only other guy who you know, of course, Hamilton, if he hadn't had that slump in the last month or so, he probably would have won it easily. But David Murphy also had a great year. Now, he's not going to get Player of the Year, but he had a pretty good year, too. I think he hit over 300 this year, so he had a pretty good season. Any ideas, guys, before we get to the Cowboys on the pitching situation? There's a great deal of talk about Greinke, McCarthy. I would try to get David Price. I would try to get David Price and try to come up with some kind of a trade to get David Price. That's what I would try to do. And I pretty much be willing to give up Profar, who I think they would want, or Elvis Andrews. I think they would probably want Profar more than Elvis Andrews, and then maybe even give up Mike Olt. Those two young guys. Would you make that trade, David?
With those guys, probably not. I would really like to see Profar stay here, because I'd rather give up Elvis just because he's going to be a free agent and he's going to be asking for a lot more after a good season that he had this past season. Because I just wouldn't want to get rid of those two players. Now, I'd probably want to give up maybe Martin Perez or something like that, but I would not give up both Profar and Olt just for Price. And something that's also gone through the back of my mind for another possible trade, I mean, he didn't have the season that you would expect him to have, but possibly trade for Tim Lincecum as well.
Now, that would be pretty interesting. You're right. He didn't have a good season, but he's a pretty good pitcher. But Carlos, would you give up Profar and Mike Olds to get David Price? Because I would. I mean, I think when you can get a pitcher like that, you have to be willing to give up some young players. Would you do it, Carlos?
I would. Man, I really like to see him come over here. That would be awesome. Profar, I don't know. I don't know. But I really like to see him come over here.
But if you're the Rays, you don't want Elvis for the same reason David just said, that you're probably going to lose him in a couple of years.
Right, and they probably wouldn't do that. I mean, I don't think they want. I'm sure they want him to sign back in Tampa Bay, and you got to have some really good prospects to trade, because Elvis would be 1 year guy, and then poof, you know, he can be gone.
Right. Right, and so they would be giving up, one of the best pitchers in baseball, basically for a year and a half. So I think they would probably want Profar. I mean, I'd be willing to do it. I mean, I know, David, you're right that Profar has a tremendous talent, but I think if you can get a guy like David Price, I definitely would take a chance on Profar. In fact, I'd be willing to give up Michael, David Price. I mean, Martin Perez and Profar. If I can get a guy like Price, now you might want to get somebody else coming our way, maybe a catcher. They've got some extra catchers over there, so maybe that would be a good trade for us. But, I mean, if you can get your hands on David Price, I'd be willing to put a lot on the table for him. Guys, does anybody have any information on these changes at the stadium? I've been hearing that they're trying to make the stadium they're improving the ventilation. Anybody hear anything about that?
Yeah, I was reading earlier today on that, and that's exactly what it is. They're actually reconfiguring the front part, you know, when you first come in to the main entrance. They're kind of making a change to what it looked like 20 years ago when the ballpark first opened. And it's hard to believe 20 years ago in the ballpark. But, yeah, it's been that long, and, you know, whenever they built that Cuervo, and it wasn't always called the Cuervo Club, but they took away that ventilation that came to the ballpark. And when they did that, it created kind of like when the winds come in, they kind of spin around back out towards right field. And that's why we were getting a lot of, they say it's non-scientific, but it really is. A lot of the home runs going over to the right field. So But what they're going to do is they're going to take out that club, move it over towards the left a little bit, open up that area so when you first come in through the main entrance, you can look all the way into the field. They're adding an extra row of seats, so they're making the foul territory, you know, from the home plate going back. It's currently 52 feet. It's going to go down to 50 feet now. So they're add that extra row, but they're actually losing about 100 seats overall to the max capacity of this ballpark. So,
if they can keep a few more balls in the stadium, you know, if we could take away some home runs, I'd be willing to do that because I think this park is too easy to hit home runs, particularly in right center. So if they can change the wind a little bit and keep the balls in the park a little bit more, that's going to help the pitchers a lot.
Oh, I agree. I completely agree. So it'll make things really interesting for next year. But
right.
I don't know if you heard the other news today about the Rangers is that they're going to play two exhibition games at the Alamo Dome.
Right.
I heard that.
I had a note to bring that up for you guys. They're going to play at the Alamo Dome, which maybe that could be a little test of Major League Baseball. I mean, in San Antonio, that might be because, you know, you may have heard about the Marlins literally, I mean, they're like in liquidation mode again. They're giving up $160 million of payroll. They're making this big trade with the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, they're just like unloading half of the team. And the fans in Miami are pretty angry. So you might need a team to move to San Antonio sometime in the next 5 or 6 years.
And, you know, another talk, I've heard that about the Marlins. You know, the Marlins, they just got a new stadium.
I know.
That's the best part. But
I know.
Another talk, though, I don't know if you heard, but over in Oakland, they haven't been really happy because they played at Alameda Stadium. I know it's got a new name
right,
now,
yeah,
but
right,
it's still
right.
The old Oakland Alameda Stadium.
Sure.
The A's are kind of hinting at that they want a new stadium, too, and they're talking about, you know, if they don't get what they want, they might move. And
well, that might be the best thing in the world to move them to San Antonio.
Yeah, but, you know, San Antonio, there's a lot of Rangers and Astro fans, but I don't know. I don't know if it's it's definitely a big market. I just don't know, you know, in the Alamo Dome, it's going to be interesting because it's not really configured for baseball.
No, that's not a solution for baseball. I mean, they can play an exhibition game, but that's not really a major league solution. What they're going to have to do is they're going to have to build a new baseball stadium. If they were to build they have actually a pretty good park right now for the missions, but it's a double-A park. I mean, it's a beautiful park, but it's not a major league park. But if they could build a major league stadium, commit themselves to a major league stadium, I think they could easily get the A's, or even Tampa, or the Marlins, or some other team that needs to make a move. So I wouldn't be. I mean, I'd love to see the Oakland A's for the one simple reason that you would then have three teams in the American League West. You know, Houston, San Antonio, and the Rangers in the same division. I think that would be great for the fans in this area, just like it is in the NBA. You know, where you have those three teams. You know, the Rockets, the Spurs, and the Mavericks in one division. I think that would be great for Major League fans here in Texas, but whether that'll happen, I don't know.
Less West Coast games.
Well, that's the other reason. You don't have to stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning to watch, you know, those games in Oakland where they don't draw. I mean, the fact is the A's have never drawn well. We've got about 5 minutes, guys, and let's get into the Cowboys for a little bit. They're 4-5. They're only a game behind the Giants, which is amazing to me. David, any thoughts on the Cowboys? Do you think they're going to go to the Super Bowl? That's kind of a cynical question, David.
Well, considering they're halfway to what my prediction was of 8-8, sitting at 4-4, I mean, I really just think that they finally were able to click for one game. And I just don't know. I think maybe they can continue that against the Browns. But, I mean, I'm still going to be questionable on how they're going to react playing the Browns. If it's going to be the team that we've been seeing the last few weeks, or if it's going to be the team that actually clicked, where it's special teams and everything just kind of gelled together to form a good quality team.
Well, if they lose to the Browns, David, Jerry Jones will blow up.
Jerry Jones will not blow up. We've already seen that. We already know that he's committed to being the general manager and owner
right.
of that team. He is not going anywhere, so I don't see him blowing up at all.
Well, maybe he should blow up because they're supposed to have, Carlos, as I was looking at the schedule, the schedule from now on gets pretty good for the Cowboys. They're going to play the Browns. They got the Redskins coming up. I think they've got one more with the Giants, or are they done with the Giants? I think they've got one more.
They're done with the Giants.
Yeah,
Philadelphia after Washington.
That's what I mean. So that's a couple of games they should win. Again, they should win. So, I mean, the idea that this club ends up maybe with 8 wins or 9 wins is a little bit better now than it was earlier in the year. But did you catch the game at all on Sunday, Carlos?
I did watch a little bit of it, mainly the third and fourth. To David's point, they did come together, and, you know, they looked like a good team. There's no reason why they shouldn't win the next 3 games. I mean, but... Yeah, you know, the funny thing is around the office, you know, every week, like, oh, the Cowboys lost. And as soon as they get that one win, and like, oh, yeah, we're going back to the Super Bowl. Well, not this year, but it could happen, though. I mean, if you got to think of the Giants last year, it's just if they get hot, you know.
Right.
The Giants were 9-7, I think, last year.
Right, right.
You know, before they got it's possible. I don't see it happening, but I didn't see the Giants going to the Super Bowl last year either. So.
No, well, that's the same thing that happened the first time they went 4 years ago. They had a big finish also.
Right,
you know,
right.
The both times they won the Super Bowl, they've done it because they get hot in the last month. But here's the schedule for the Cowboys. I'm just looking at it right now. They got Cleveland. They have Washington, Philadelphia, Cincinnati. So that's 4 games right there. They should win. So that would put them, let's say they win those 4, they're now 8-5. Then they have Pittsburgh, well, that's a tough game. New Orleans, they could win that. And then Washington, so they could actually end up, I'm guessing with 9 wins, maybe even 10 if they get lucky, guys. That would be that's not out of the question. That's not a very tough schedule, David, that they have.
No, I mean, even looking at the schedule before the season even started, I thought they had a pretty easy schedule. Now, I mean, obviously I was not expecting Atlanta to come out and be 8-1 right now and everything. I mean, that's kind of blown, I think, everyone out of the water. But I think besides, like you were saying, Pittsburgh, which is definitely going to be a tough game, I think New Orleans, I think they're starting to finally come around and start clicking, that could probably be a good close game. But just looking at the schedule, I thought it was fairly like one of the easiest schedules I've seen for the Cowboys in a while, that they could easily have been like 9-7, 10-6, something of that nature. But again, I've never seen this team click where they could put that kind of record together.
Well, they have 2 games coming up because they have one on Sunday. They play Cleveland here on Sunday, and then
mm-hmm.
they have the Redskins on Thanksgiving Day. And then
you always have to have the Cowboys and Indians on Thanksgiving.
That's right. That's always a lot of fun. But they could win the next two. They're 6-5. So, you know, then they've got Philadelphia. That could be 7-5. Then they have Cincinnati. How is Cincinnati doing? I don't think they're doing that great, are they?
No, but they beat the Redskins. They beat the Redskins on, or not the Redskins, they beat the Giants on Sunday. 31-13, if my memory serves me correct.
Okay, so let's not.
Well, the Bengals are 4-5 right now.
Right.
So same as the Cowboys. Well, let's not underestimate them. But Pittsburgh, I mean, that's going to be a tough game, obviously. New Orleans, I mean, that team is a bit devastated, though, by all the scandal they have, right? So I don't know about that team. And then, of course, the last game of the year, Washington. But the thing with the Redskins is every time the Cowboys have to play the Redskins in a game that matters, you got to take the Redskins seriously because they don't play dead when they play the Cowboys. Even if the game doesn't mean anything to them, there's something about that rivalry. They always show up, guys.
Right, and you know, you can't – RG3, you know, my sister went to Baylor, so I'm also a Baylor fan, and I've seen what that guy can do. He still scares me. Concussion or not, he's a great – he's going to be great for many years to come, so.
Absolutely. No, you're exactly right. Well, guys, we're out of time. We're out of time. I want to wish both of you guys a very happy Thanksgiving with your families, and we'll do this again probably in a couple of weeks. Hopefully by then the Cowboys will be 6-5 and we'll finally convince David that they're going to go to the Super Bowl. But David, I'm being cynical because the truth of the matter is I don't believe they're going to go to the Super Bowl. Okay.
Maybe you can just prove me wrong that they won't finish 8-8 and not make the playoffs.
Let me put it to you this way. There's a better chance that the Stars start playing their season by December 15th, then the Cowboys going to the Super Bowl.
I agree with that one.
All right, David, thank you so much. My best to your family. Carlos, also with you, the best to your family, and we'll get together again. Thank you very much to both of you guys.
Likewise. Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
All right. Thank you, Carlos, and thank you, David, as we look at sports tonight, this November 14th, Wednesday, here in Dallas, Texas. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight, and we'll do this again in a couple of weeks when we look at DFW Sports with my good friend David Busby and Carlos Torres. I don't think that we forgot any team. No, we didn't. I think we covered all the teams tonight. Oh, we didn't talk about the Longhorns. Well, we've got to do that the next time. We'll probably get some Longhorn fans really mad at us because we didn't talk about them. Good night, everybody. Go Aggies. Go Aggies on against Sam Houston. Everybody have a wonderful evening.